Hello and welcome to another episode of There Can Only Be One. I'm Jer. As always, joined by my illustrious co-host.
Benjamin Wheeler. Nice to have you.
Yeah. So there's been a few interesting things since we last podcasted. A few tournaments. You won again.
Well, Jeremy, I didn't win. Leonardo DiCaprio won. He won the Oscar, and this is important.
Here we go.
I'm going to give a little bit of a backstory for those that aren't familiar with the deck.
Oh, boy.
So, chances are you've probably heard of Pattern Rector.
Or even Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock. This is what I'm leading to. It's a deck revolving around a bunch of SAC outlets, Protean Hulk. It's like a fairer version of Flash Hulk, if that helps.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And
it plays more bears.
A lot. Yeah, that's your game plan. Game A is you just play a bunch of bears and beat down. And game B, you just kill them out of nowhere on turn four.
Yep. Or if you're against Surge, you just kill them out of nowhere on turn four, games two and three.
No, I killed them turn five on game three.
All right.
I gave him a shot. You missed it.
If you had one shot.
Yeah, one opportunity. Anyways, so we... Pattern Rector, we affectionately call it Sandra Bullock in the format, because for a while, when myself and local Highlander degenerate and council member Spencer Sacklund were living together and being, you know, degenerates, we were playing this deck quite a lot, and we always felt like we thought it was the best deck in the format at the time, that this should just be winning. Because the deck is nuts. Like, it's a very good deck.
Yeah, I remember at the time I was playing Blue-White Control, and I put both Relic of Progenitus and Grafdigger's Cage in my deck to get with Trinket Mage, just to tilt you guys out. So,
that is our biggest weakness, is trying to tilt us out.
Was successful.
I think you did actually get me with...
I got you with Cage.
Yeah, that's what it was.
I'd already used Relic. And you were like, haha, the coast is clear. And then I was like, Trinket Mage, Cage. You were like,
that's a frustrating level of hate to deal with. Anyways, we weren't winning, though. That's the problem. We were always 3-1-ing or losing in the finals.
Mostly losing in the finals.
Yeah, and it just felt bad. You know, we felt like we were never the bride, but we're more a bridesmaid. And this was before the film Bridesmaid, so that's not a reference to that. But... Sandra Bullock in most of her films, you know, just she always feels like the underdog.
Miss Congeniality.
Yeah, Miss Congeniality, Miss Congeniality 2, Miss Congeniality 3.
There was a 3?
I imagine so. I don't know for sure.
Spoilers, Ben. Spoilers.
I'm just guessing. Anyways, so it was affectionately named Sandra Bullock. And how does this tie in with Leonardo DiCaprio? Well, Leo also has never really won an Oscar until now. And that was on the Sunday, and on Monday, with Sandra Bullock having never won a Monday night event.
Yep.
I strolled up, paid the entry fee, and mised my way to a victory. Although it
had won a Highlander Top 8 Championships before.
Oh, sure, but that's not a Monday night. That's like winning a Screen Actors Guild Award, you know? I mean, it's great, and that's amongst your peers, but it's not the Oscar. There's no water cooler discussion about that.
All right. Fair enough.
We just lost our sponsor from the Screen Actors Guild. I'm sorry. Anyways, Sandra Bullock. Great deck.
Yeah.
I think it was well positioned.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking for a few weeks how the meta is pretty full of mid-range and that it's sort of ripe for unfair decks to start picking them off. Although this last week, Josh was able to take it down with Jeskai again.
Yes, Jeskai midrange. I need to talk to Josh. He needs to pace himself. We can't go winning all these events with Jeskai. You want to win a couple, then just lay
let
low.
Let it simmer. Yeah. And then turn up the heat again.
Yeah. Then full blast.
Yeah.
Slam the tech six drop that you've been wanting to play.
It's Rorix.
I think it's actually Aurelia.
I've played that card.
Aurelia, for those that don't know, Aurelia the War Leader, fantastic gate crash mythic.
3/4 flyer.
There she is in all her glory. Oh, my God.
Oh, boy. So it's a 3/4 flyer for 6. Some pretty heavy mana costs there.
What, you don't have the double red, double white?
In your cryptic command deck.
She almost turns on Orohas by herself.
One short.
Yeah, you just need one. It could be a goblin guide. But no, she's got flying, she's got vigilance, she's got haste. So she's a lightning angel. And then for 2 extra mana, just 2 mana, when she attacks for the first turn each
first time
each turn,
yeah,
you untap all creatures you control, and then you get an additional combat.
Yeah, for free.
Yeah, so big dumb dragon, you clock in, and they're just like, oh, well.
And if you have Soulfire Grandmaster, and I'm sure there's something that could let you flicker, like momentary
Into the Royal?
Blink.
Oh, flicker. No, we don't get that cute yet.
Because Into the Royal doesn't work, because then you need to play her at instant speed.
Yeah.
If you had an Aether Vial on 6, Soulfire Grandmaster, and a bounce spell.
I did want to try playing Eldrazi Displacer in this deck.
That card's real good. I've played it.
It might be worth it. You just get to blink out. I mean, you get to blink out your Aurelia.
Well, it's really good on offense and on defense.
Yep. You get to blink out all their tokens. You can kind of mess up maybe their combo. Like
it's really good against equipment.
Yep. But yeah, no, like that Jeskai is still good.
Of course.
Nothing has changed from that. Sandra Bullock is good. She's in the perfect meta. Well, not the perfect.
So do you think the meta started to shift a little bit?
Even though we just had 2 decks that operate on kind of this mid-range game plan, yes. I do think ever so slightly
I agree. I think it's starting to shift. We're starting to see a couple more unfair decks, a couple more other decks to sort of start beating everyone who's playing mid-range.
Yeah, you're getting decks that were mid-range. They're going a bit more degenerate, right?
Yeah.
Or you're getting decks that were, you know, aggressive and look to go like Wild Nacatl into something else. You're seeing those players switch into casting goblins instead, or playing Lingering Souls.
They're really starting to go wider to beat these decks that aren't playing Wraths.
Yeah.
There's a couple control decks popping up that are playing Wraths.
Yeah, just Wrath of God is getting played again, which
is good against the green mid-range decks.
Good against Hoof, and there's a lot of Hoof right now too, which, I mean, there's always
also
a
true.
Lot of Hoof.
Well, I mean, we were talking for a while around Christmas, and no one played Hoof. Trent stopped playing.
Yeah.
He's the most notable Hoof player, probably. Pat James was still on Sandra Bullock, or Leo, or Pattern Hulk, whatever the kids are calling it.
Whatever
these
garbage
days.
Nickname we've decided to call it.
Yeah.
That's the best part about this format, is deciding which actor to name your deck after.
Or if you're playing a 4-color mid-range, aggro deck. which nonsensical blood name to call your deck?
Yeah, you want an adjective and then a shard or wedge. And the adjective is usually one that you would want to, that you don't want to describe your food, right? You don't want to say, oh,
wet.
I have a, wet, soggy, moldy,
dark.
Yeah, you don't want something like that. But it's a good change. It's a refreshing change,
yeah,
I guess I could say.
Well, there's not 30 kitchen finxes in the room anymore.
No,
it's
not at all.
It's down to like 29.
Yeah, the last time we were here, I mentioned how one of the Monday nights had like one of the most diverse metas with 37 or 38 people, and then 30 individual archetypes.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on those exact numbers, but this Monday had 36 people with 32, arguably 33 individual archetypes, which was, I mean, that's, we're getting close.
The Hoof with Kiki is the same as the Hoof without Kiki.
Yeah, that's what I, well.
It's the same.
It's pretty much the same. Alistair Norman played, we mentioned it before, a version of Cradle Hoof, but with the Kiki Jiki Pestermite combo.
To get off Splinter, or Tooth and Nail.
Yeah, to find off Tooth and Nail for 18 damage. And he took the list and then just like cut a solid 10 creatures from it. And after I told him, he's like, oh, I didn't even notice that. So he was playing like a hoof list with like less creatures than your average mid-range deck.
That's not ideal.
But, I mean, he did well with it.
Your goal in that deck is usually to get Gaia's Cradle in play and generate a bunch of mana.
Yeah, his Gaia's Cradle is a solid non-basic forest in that list. Sometimes it's like a spicy, what is it called? Hickory Woodlot, like a depletion land from Mercadian Masks. Like he gets two shots, and then he has his board wrapped, and he's like, well, okay, there goes the magic. But, yeah, no, it's getting diverse, it's getting more exciting, and I think it'll continue.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to continue on this path. That's sort of how the cycle works. It'll keep going for a little bit until mid-range becomes good again, and by that I mean there's so many swarm decks, and they start hating out the aggro decks because they're slightly faster, a bit more consistent. Then there's a bunch of control decks to fight those decks. And once there becomes a lot of aggro decks again and a few control decks, that's when mid-range is gonna jump back up.
And then every so often, just hard combo pops in, rears its ugly head.
Well, yeah, hard combo's like Dredge in Legacy. It's like always good, but when people expect it, it's always less good.
It's pretty much, it can actually just be the worst deck
certainly
in the room.
Like, if Robin's been winning with Storm, now is not the time to sleeve up High Tide. Or whatever other degenerate combo deck you like to play. But if everyone's playing, like, if people start playing, like, Hunt the Hunter for the Thregtusk Mirror, then it's time to sleeve up the old High Tide or the Black Lotus.
Theros Bomb. Is it Hunt the Hunter? I know what card you're talking about.
It's Hunt the Hunter.
Don't look it up, folks.
One green instant, target creature you control gets +2/+2 until end of turn, and it fights target green creature your opponent's control.
This is a card that'll never see. Oh, thank you. Finally.
See, I nailed it.
Have you played this card in a Highlander deck? Because I played some really bad narrow cards before.
No, all my narrow hate cards hate on blue.
Yeah, I've played that's Choke. Not narrow.
I've played Pyro and Red Blast. I've played Boil. Oh, I lied. I also played Anarchy once.
Why?
Everyone was playing Mono White.
Okay. Everyone was playing Mono White?
There were like 5 Mono White decks in the room.
There was a while when White Weenie was super popular.
Yeah.
But you know it's red?
And I was tired of them Armageddoning me, so I Anarchied them first.
You know what is good against White Weenie that is in red? Pyroclasm, Anger, you have at least 12 really good playable cards before you get to Anarchy.
But Ben,
that's just greedy.
If you're going to do it, do it as well as you can.
That's good inspiration for the kids.
I've also played a lot of Massacre. That card's real good.
In Highlander? You can't Burning Wish for it.
I got Alex Stacey so good with Massacre. In the span of 4 turns. So he's playing like his Mardu tokens deck.
Yeah.
So you can imagine a -2/-2 effect is quite good.
Yeah, that's a Wrath of God.
So I was playing, I think I was playing Mono Black. I turn 4, I Massacre him for free, play a threat. He kills my threat, starts making more tokens. I play Massacre Worm, hit him for like 14. Then he kills my Massacre Worm. Then the game gets super grindy, and I Yogwill back my Massacre Worm to kill him. Never attacked him. Just beat him with massacres.
You only cast massacre-related cards? Like, I imagine...
I cast some other cards, but they didn't really
sure,
do much.
They're not real cards, though. Massacre and Massacre Worm.
I mean, that art is so good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Shoutouts to Krovax.
Yeah.
For being real salty towards Gerard. I believe.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into a lore bomb just now. That's for a different...
Not my area of expertise, yeah,
that's,
for
that's
sure.
Another plate of... what is it? A different plate of cookies for another glass of milk? Anywho.
Where do you get these sayings?
just old Vic Magic posts.
All right, makes sense. All right, so the main focus of this episode that we wanted to talk about was mana bases in Highlander.
Mana bases, mana in general.
Because it's a lot of... It's actually really hard to figure out the first time you come into a competitive singleton format. You can't just GM entire fetch dual mana bases, throw in a couple utility lands, call it quits. You have to actually think about it.
It is the hardest part of deck building, right? Like, there's so many times I've shown decks to people, like you, Josh Lane, just like anybody, Spencer, and being like, this is the deck I'm running, and they'll go through and pick out these weird cards, and they'll be like, how is this treating you? They'll be like, it's insane. It deals with this, this, and this.
And then we're like,
and all these like sick deck building like decisions. And then you'll get, it's like, okay, and what are your lands like? Or like, what? How many basics are you running? And then it just all falls apart. All respect is just thrown out the window. And it's just like, so for Sandra Bullock, someone's like, Pat Verduzco asked me, how many basics am I running in my three-color pod list?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, 3 forests, 2 swamp, 1 plains. And he was like, that can't be right. And I'm like, I think it was 2-2-1.
Whoa.
2 forest, 2 swamp, 1 plain. Which
you're still playing 35 lands?
36.
All right.
Plus Dryad Arbor.
36 plus Dryad Arbor or 35 plus
36 Dryad Arbor? 36 plus Dryad Arbor.
Oh, boy.
I love having a lot of lands, which we'll get to in a bit. But they just like looked at the basics and they're like, so what's your method behind this? And I was like, oh, you know, I had 5 slots left. I had a Caracas, so I didn't want to play in 2 plains, so I went to swamp. And it was just like, it's amazing how much of an impact that can make, right?
Because you're playing like, Murmuring Bosque?
No, I wasn't the list that I won with, but I cut it.
Okay.
Because I hate that land so much. But that, I mean, I imagine the reason I hate it is mostly just like because it just screwed me over so many times on Monday. So it's like, oh, cool, I have this mana dork. Like, my hand is great, except I can't cast my mana dork on turn one because of Murmuring Bosque.
Have you considered playing more Doran?
I was playing Doran.
Oh, okay.
Big Dirtles himself. If I'm sleeving a Bayou Scrubland Savannah, you best believe I'm leaving home with a copy of Doran.
Like, all right, makes sense.
I wasn't playing Treefolk Harbinger, though, or Wicker Bow Elder. Which I don't think I should be.
Wickerball Elder's a homie.
Yeah, no, that guy slaps. Like, he's good. He's real good.
Yeah.
But not for what I was trying to do there.
That's fair.
But yeah, so like switching, you just switch one of those swamps to a plains, and that can make or break matchups.
Definitely.
Right? Like, if you're against a Blood Moon deck, and you know that they'll probably get a Blood Moon, and, like, you just need to get those 2 planes out, right?
Well, yeah, it gets crucial to cast Karmic Guide, to cast Academy Rector, and another white spell.
Yeah, just, like...
But you also have some double black spells, right?
You do...
But they're not as crucial.
No, they're not.
And that's what you have to look at when you're tight on basics, is not only what spells are you going to need to cast to function, but what spells are you going to need to cast to win the game?
Yeah, which is, I did part of that where it's like, oh, well, I have more double black spells that I will need to cast, so I'm going to up on the swamp. But against Blood Moon matchups and back to basics matchups, I don't actually need those double black cards or the functions that cost double black as much as I would need white cards, right? Like, the singleton white cards, like Casali Pride Mage, Dromoka's Command, those kind of cards, Academy Rector, those kind of cards are going to get me out of those situations, and I won't get severely punished for fetching them early, which is a classic blunder. You don't do that. Like, that's just heads-up deck building, right?
Yeah,
it's just
exactly.
Making that swap.
And setting yourself up with a good mana base is so useful, and once you get good at building mana bases, you'll start seeing it when you play your matches. You're like, oh man, drew the perfect land, and it just keeps happening. And then eventually you realize it's because you learned how to build good mana bases.
Yeah, you can. It's like
you stop drawing temples. You stop
well
drawing like opening hands with three basics in your five-color deck.
Yeah, you don't want that. But the day I stop trying temples is the day I stop playing Highlander.
Yeah.
Oh, that's another thing I'd like to touch on, is coming to play tap lands.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things we need to talk about.
Because this is where I think we are a little split.
Yeah, tap lands suck.
And that's, see, I used to think that.
They do.
But, oh my god, but you get so much value from Scrylands. So
no,
much
don't.
Value. I love them. They're so good. They fix your mana.
Do you like Halimar Depths?
No, but that's, okay, Scry Duels.
All right.
Because if I'm on a deck, if I'm on a wedge deck, right?
Sure.
That ideally has blue. Like if I'm on Jeskai or Bug, like Assault Eye, or like a Rug mid-range deck.
Yeah.
Then I want Temple of the blue-red temple. I want the blue-green temple. I want my enemy-colored temples, at least. Because you don't have the best duels for them.
Yeah, you do. They just printed ban lands.
Okay, you can have, like, I'm not talking about...
The only duel you don't get is the fast land, the Scar, original Scars.
Exactly. So yeah. I'll take the Scry land. I don't even like fast lands.
I love those things. They're so good.
I wasn't playing
Turn 4, that's when I'm okay to have a thing come in tapped. But turns 1, 2, 3, that's when you lose games.
But if your cards... So my defense is that if you are playing wedge decks... then your card quality is probably higher, right? That's why you
than
play
a two-color deck.
Yeah, than a two-color deck, than a one-color deck. Not that you play duels in those decks.
Yeah.
But even more so than, I think, like a three-color... maybe this is just straight up incorrect. Three-color shard deck. Like, at least to me, like if you're playing Abzan, you're getting the best of everything, right, that those colors has to offer. That goes with shard decks, too.
So if you're playing, I was going to say, so if you're playing Esper, you don't get the best of Esper?
You do, but you don't get as many cards that are just like, why did they print these, if that makes sense, right? Like, you don't get Abrupt Decay or Maelstrom Pulse every single
set. But those are two-color cards.
But they're in enemy colors, right? What I mean is that you won't get those in, like, you get them in Jund, but you're not playing Jund anyways.
I played Jund.
Okay, sure. What I'm trying to get at is that you have a higher card quality in three color decks. Like that's not something to argue.
Okay.
And that because of that, if you skip if you intentionally skip a beat to ensure that you will be drawing like the correct powerful card at that point in time.
And you said we're already playing blue.
Ideally playing blue. Like,
why don't you just use blue spells to do that?
Well, why not both?
All right.
Why not get greedy and do both?
This is anti-greedy.
Oh, this is a different breed of greed. This is the kind of greed that... This is like those coupon shows where somebody buys like 100 cans of cream of mushroom. That's me. I want 100 cans of cream and mushroom in my Jeskai deck. Because you never know when you might need it. You might as well, right? Like, nobody else gets it, but you do.
I no longer have any idea what you're talking about.
Neither do the viewers. It's all
perfect.
Trust me, guys. Cream of mushroom. But
back to mana bases.
Yeah, the good, you know, what we're supposed to be talking about.
So when I play a tap land... 95% of the time, it's a man land, so it's sort of like a spell land, something that will generate me value over the course of a game.
Yeah.
Something that if I don't happen to draw what I need, I still have something to do with my mana.
Yeah,
when I look at it, instead of having it sort of minorly help me at the immediate moment, it's going to help me more long term. By providing an additional threat and a mana sink.
Yeah, I'd play both. Like, don't get...
All right, how many tap lands are you playing in a three-color mid-range deck that plays 36 or 37 lands?
Okay, are we counting, like, Clifftop Retreat and Glacial Fortress?
No, those come in untapped.
Well, they come into play tapped if you've just spent the first couple of turns playing tap lands. No, I play the three temples... Or two temples, sorry.
I actually just got shivers down my spine.
I play two temples.
Three temples.
Two temples, Nomad Monastery, Colonnade, Wandering
you
Fumarole.
You mean, Nomad...
Mystic Monastery.
Yeah, Mystic Monastery.
Nomad Monastery.
Nomad Outpost is the
yeah,
Mardu
I just combined Mystic Monastery, Nomad Outpost, and maybe a little bit of Nantuko Monastery in there.
And so we got two of those, the Triland.
And then the other two. So that's five.
And then two Manlands?
Yes. That's it.
All right. So I'd play two, maybe three. Just because I can't stand not doing things on the first two turns. I want to Swords their guy. I want to cast Ponder.
Yeah.
I want to Mana Leak their other guy.
I like saving those cards. I like saving... I don't like Ponder on turn one in Highlander.
It depends on the situation.
Matchup and...
Me and you are... All right, we're going to take a short aside and talk about casting Discard and Ponder in the... Discard effects and cantrips in the early turns if your hand is already set up and you know the matchup.
Yeah.
So you're playing against Pattern Rector, and you have a Thoughtseize in hand, but you have a couple 2-drops that are good and a 3-drop. Do you cast the discard turn one?
If I have 2-drop and 3-drop, I probably cast that.
You have 2 2-drops.
Oh, I have 2 2-drops.
And your lands come into play untapped, because I built the deck.
I probably don't actually thought... Well, here's the thing. Because if they Thoughtseize me, No, I don't do it. I don't think I do.
I don't think I do it. Because their crucial turn is turn 4, turn 5. So yeah. I'd rather Thoughtseize them on turn 3. After they've drawn a couple cards, after they started to sculpt their hand...
Yeah, if you want to, like, you apply the pressure, and then you can still on curve 2-drop plus hand attack.
Exactly.
Hit them on turn 3 and get a key card. Like, they could have even tutored in that time, right?
Exactly, or you could tag an Elidamri's Call that doesn't get around discard.
Yeah, anything like that. Or against Cradlehoof, right? If they've spent the first couple of turns, like, let them develop the dudes... Or do what you can, but you don't Thoughtseize a Llanowar.
Yeah, start playing more threats.
Yeah, you play out your threat, pressure them, and then when they have their mana up, right?
When they have 2 or 3 cards left in hand, that's when you want to Thoughtseize them.
Yeah, and you Thoughtseize them. They have Polukranos and a Garruk. You take the Garruk, so then they're like, oh, I got to play Polukranos. You just kill it.
Yeah, and then you're off to the races. But I see so many people cast discard on turn one, and they just like look, and their opponent just has like. A curve, and they like don't know whether they're supposed to take the 2-drop, don't know whether they're supposed to take the 4-drop. They just don't have enough information to make the right decision.
Yeah.
And it's impossible that early in the game. And there's some decks you do want to cast discard as early as possible, like Storm. I think casting discard against control as early as possible is very good because they don't have much interaction early, and you need to get under them as fast as possible. So if you're otherwise doing nothing on turn one, I think staying on curve against control in most when you're playing most decks is important.
You can do some pretty spicy, like manipulative plays with hand attack against control. Like if you have just like a Rec Sage, Reclamation Sage that you want to cast on curve.
Yeah.
Then you duress, rip their counterspell, and then they're forced into playing a mana rock. Even if they don't have like a 4-drop they'd want to ramp into.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, I don't have anything else to do. I'm not going to bluff this counterspell, so I'll just play my rock. And then you Rec Sage. And then you have a pressure that they don't want to use a Wrath against, right?
Exactly.
If you just have a mana dork or a 1-drop and a 2-1 that has value, like killing it's actually going to be worse for a lot of decks.
Yeah.
Put it in the graveyard, they can reanimate it, they can Eternal Witness it.
Exactly.
And play it's just Resto Angel.
Yeah, and it's the same with cantrips. If you have a really good curve already, you have a counter spell, you have a threat, you have a removal spell, what are you cantripping for? What are you looking to find? You have lands.
Yeah.
Like, wait. I really love AJ Soccer's brainstorming videos, and where he says the best brainstorm is the one you never cast because you just always have it all.
Yeah. That's another thing. We could do a whole episode on not brainstorming turn one.
Shoutouts to Noel Robin.
Or brain.
our favorite green mage who's been casting brainstorm recently, and he told me a moment which made me so proud. He was in the top four this past week, kept a hand, didn't cast Brainstorm turn one when he had nothing else to do. He said it felt so wrong. But then he cast a turn two and Brainstorm locked himself.
See, it might feel... But... as you're learning, it'll feel wrong. And in the moment, you might be like, oh, what am I doing with my life? And then later, when you're like, Brainstorm, you're like, oh my god, it's Ancestral Recall. Then you're good. Like, then it starts kicking in, you know?
Yeah.
It's like putting away for retirement.
Yeah.
When you're young, I mean, start young. But it feels bad, right? You're like, oh, there goes part of my paycheck. I can't do this, can't do this. But when you get to that age, you're like, oh, yeah. Oh. That's another year I don't have to work, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So, good analogies today on the podcast.
Don't cast your cantrips and discard turn one.
Before they hatch.
I was going to say unless you have to, but...
Oh, that's better advice. Anyways, back to mana bases.
How many more times are we going to say back to mana bases this episode?
Oh, at least once more, but I would like to limit it to that.
All right. So another thing I want to talk about, we talked about mana bases for three-color decks, which also applies to some extent to four-color decks.
Yep.
And five-color decks, you basically just have to play your mana still sucks.
There are two kinds of five-color decks, right? They're the ones that can play Undiscovered Paradise, and then the ones where the person doesn't own a copy of Undiscovered Paradise. No, but, well, yeah, that's it, right? You're either casting Wild Nacatl and Delver of Secrets in the same deck.
But, yeah.
Or you're casting Wildfire and Johnny. Not a Johnny.
And you have Chromatic Lantern in place, so it didn't matter what lands you put in your deck.
Anyways. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter. You just got to mize that lantern and you're good to go.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about one and two color decks. And these decks, one of the biggest benefits they get of being one and two color is that they get to play a lot of utility lands.
Oh, they're the best. Utility lands are so good. Shout out to utility lands. Every time Wizards prints one, it just makes me, even if it's like not super powerful for the format, it's just like, yeah.
Well, yeah, we even got a really good one recently in Seagate Wreckage. I've had a lot of success playing this card. And
still super undervalued.
Yeah, big red, yep. Academy. It's having a colorless source that comes into play untapped.
Yep.
And once you're out of gas, you can just start drawing cards with it every turn. It's super powerful. And it's a land. It just sits there. Taps for mana.
You're not losing anything from playing it. Like, if you're... I mean, it might get a little more difficult if you're trying to cast Ball Lightning or Groundbreaker.
Sure.
But if you're not, like, it's just gas.
Yeah,
it's
and...
It's value.
And so in one and two color decks, I love playing five or more utility lands. Because you can afford to have colorless sources in your deck. I play more creature lands, so I will often play, like, Mishra's Factory is super, super powerful. Mutavault if I'm aggressive.
Yeah, I have those two cards like stapled together in my like collection.
Super good together.
Yeah.
Your Mishra's Factory pumps your Mutavault. It's an assembly worker.
And nobody, they don't remember.
No,
that.
They never remember.
No, they don't remember that.
I loved playing Riptide Lab and blue decks. You can win. I've single-handedly won games with Riptide Lab.
Even, yeah, for those that don't know...
Riptide Laboratory.
Yeah.
Has an activated ability, one in a blue, tap it, return target wizard you control to its owner's hand. So if you have this and Venser Shaper's Savant, you can lock people out of the game.
Yeah, and people... I feel like this is a card a lot of people skip, too, because they think, like, oh, I'm not playing cards like Seagate Oracle or Augur of Bolas, and it's like, okay, well, are you in blue? Yes. Oh, are you playing the four card... like, these three cards, let's
yeah,
say.
Yeah, Venser, right? Vendilion Click, Snapcaster Mage.
Or even Savior Jace.
Yeah, or another nuts one is Glenelendra.
Yep.
You can counter a spell, reset it, replay it.
Or my new darling, Reflector Mage. Oh, that is so good.
Wizard.
Yeah, just whoop, whoop. That is...
You don't even need to replay him that turn.
No, you don't. You can take it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then, you know, Riptide, play your Reflector Mage. Next turn you Riptide it back. And then cast your cantrips.
Yeah.
Because it's like turn six. one utility land that I want to talk about for monocolored decks that people might skip over, and I think you might know where I'm going
with. Are you going to say Ancient Tomb?
No, but I do like Ancient Tomb.
Okay.
Caracas.
Yeah.
I don't think enough non-white decks are running Caracas. Like,
it
is
very good.
I was playing it in Flying Men, Dodd deck, and it was nuts. It's just, like, imagine if this were colorless, right? You would still play it.
Yeah.
In some decks, not that I would play this in mono red, but I'm just giving an example. If you have a deck with hybrid cards, yeah, it sometimes just gets there, right? Like, I showed you, I was like, I almost kept this hand where it was Caracas.
Judge's Familiar. Force of Will.
Just like,
and
yeah.
Four cards you couldn't cast.
It was pretty gas. I had Blinkmoth Nexus, too.
No, you only had one land.
Oh, no, I would have drawn Blinkmoth Nexus.
That's so you would have lost.
Well, I don't know. I had 2 power by turn 3. You tell me. I would have lost. But no, this card's insane, right? It's just so good against so many different decks, and nobody expects it.
And it's another card that costs very little to put in your deck. The opportunity cost is super low if you're a one-color deck. And sometimes it wins you games. I played against Spencer when he was on a beatdown deck, and his threats were Zergo, Bellstriker, and Brimaz, and I had a Caracas.
Yeah.
No. And he just got so frustrated because I was like, bounce your Zergo, bounce your Brimaz.
The idea that this card is only really live, excuse me, against like control decks or reanimator decks, combo decks, not true.
It shuts off Pattern Hulk because you can bounce Malira.
And Anafenza. Or Anafenza, rather.
Yeah.
But against the aggressive decks or the mid-range decks that are looking to optimize their mana every turn, this is where this really just shines.
Yeah.
You just, one mana every turn, you
get
can never
Dorian.
Have your Gaddock Teague.
Yeah.
It feels so good to have against their stupid Gaddock Teague.
God, I hate that.
I hate Kithkin so much. Sorry, Cedric Phillips. Yeah, no. Play Caracas if you can get a copy
in your one color decks, two color decks, stretching it a bit if you're not white.
Yeah, that's where it gets a little iffy.
Yeah, but
Horizon Canopy.
That's another really good one.
If you're on mono green or mono white, or if you're on like if you're on two color,
and you're playing
green or white,
Yeah.
Slam the Canopy.
Yeah, just having a cycling land that actually you can also play as a land untapped. Super, super powerful.
It's perfectly fine. You're good to go. And, never mind, I got nothing.
One of my other favorite utility lands recently has been Myriad Landscape, as I've been tinkering with colorless spells that require colorless mana.
That one, Myriad, oh,
it enters. It enters
one.
Tapped, but it taps for colorless, and it has an activated ability for 2 and tap and sack it. Here we go. Search your library for up to 2 basic land cards that share a land type. Put them onto the battlefield tapped. So it casts your colorless spells, then it ramps you.
Yeah. Oh, this is just Kroos and Verge, except you're not stuck in white and green.
Yeah.
That card's good.
Yeah, it was one of the best cards in my deck in Big Red.
I can see that.
Yeah. And it's just these lands you get to play that just have incidental value that add up. That make up for the fact that your cards are slightly less powerful because you're a monocolored deck.
Yeah.
But you can abuse that.
Yeah, you're sacrificing. I mean, those decks are all about consistency, right? Like,
yeah.
If you're playing these monocolored decks, it's probably because you want 80 copies of Lightning Bolt and Goblin Guide, or Isamaru, or Flying Men.
Or you just always want to have rock. Ridiculous spell.
Yeah. Rock, big dumb idiot. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. Just as long as he's wearing a dunce cap and breathing fire, you're good to go.
Or makes each player sacrifice 4 lands.
Yeah, that card's also quite powerful. But yeah, no, utility lands. Always have a huge collection of them. And feel free to experiment, too.
Yeah.
That's something that I think a lot of people, I mean, if maybe Horizon Canopy isn't the best for some of these decks, but it's always worth a shot. Try to figure it out by yourself.
Yeah. And this is one of the areas that you can experiment with and play some of your favorite cards. Because, yet again, the opportunity cost of playing these cards, very low.
Tiny.
So we're going to go on to our new segment, Deck Degenerates, where you, the viewers, send us in some deck ideas. We pick one we like and then build a list off of it as sort of a stock list that we think is reasonable to play in Canadian Highlander. So do you want to mention which...
Well, this is one that, before we get into it, this is one that I passed off pretty much to you. I passed it off to you for the final, like, say.
Yes. Yeah.
Because the ones that I built, I just kept segueing into, like, other things.
Yeah, and that's what you mentioned to me.
Yeah, they just, like, either were too degenerate or not degenerate enough.
And I think I found a pretty happy middle ground.
Yeah, so, oh, I thought you wanted to set this up
I abandoned it.
A humdinger of a zinger.
It was bad.
Well, okay. As you folks might know...
Ben loves horrible jokes.
I do love horrible jokes. No, I'm not going to do it. Eldrazi, folks. Highlander. Not just for Modern. Or Legacy.
Or Vintage.
Or possibly Standard. Or Limited. Or Commander. Now in Canadian Highlander.
Thank God it's not in Pauper.
I've cast an Ulamog's Crusher or 12 in Pauper, so let's hold back on that.
All right, hold back.
So the submissions we received were from James
Stevenson had the list. He played his first Highlander tournament in the first Staples of about a month ago.
It's like he was trying to prove that he was gutsier than all of us by showing up to his first Highlander event in a Highlander for Staples with... an Eldrazi deck. Rug Eldrazi he was on?
Yeah. And that I stuck to his list because I talked to him a bit about it, and I really wanted to give him a list.
We also received, and from him, his list inspired Thomas Henderson also sent in a list and sent in talking about it, and then he was working on something. And then other people just, I mean, slammed the like button when Eldrazi was posted, just like... This is a sick part. Again, I hate to toot the format's horn. This is a sick part when you see like veteran being playing this format for years. They're just like the spikiest of spikes that will only play like I will only play a deck if I've been in the lab for 3 months trying to design the ultimate, you know, doomsday stacks or whatever. And they'll come by and they'll just see an Eldrazi deck and they'll be like, that is sick. Yeah. That is what we want
to
see.
Well, like, everyone in the format can appreciate the spice.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone who plays. So we have a Rug mid-range Eldrazi deck, pretty similar to James's list. I didn't get a chance to see Thomas's list that he sent in, but it's playing most of the new Eldrazi, and by most I mean, pretty I think, all? 23.
23 of them?
Yeah.
So I haven't seen this list, folks, so if I...
It's going to be posted under the video here and on the description of the MTG cast. So it's got... And it's a mid-range deck, so we're not playing too many of the two drops. We're playing Eldrazi Mimic because that card's insane.
Oh,
I was goldfishing this deck. And you can kill them on, like, turn 5 just by attacking with Eldrazi Mimic. So this deck is just an Eldrazi mid-range deck. It's playing the best Eldrazi. It's playing Thought Not Seer. It's playing Reality Smasher. It's playing Endbringer. And we're even going a bit higher. We're playing Worldbreaker. And then we're playing...
I bet there's your favorite little Eldrazi in here.
Which one?
And by it's not little. A certain Deceiver.
Deceiver of Form. Yeah, Deceiver of Form is in the deck. And then we're even playing new Kozilek and new Ulamog. In order to cast these spells, we're playing a few non-Eldrazi spells. We're playing some walls that add mana. We're playing Wall of Roots, Sylvan Caryatid. We're playing Secure Tribe Elder. We're playing a few Mana Rocks. We're playing Mindstone, Hedron Archive. Those are in the deck to ramp us, support our colorless mana costs, and to draw us cards in the late game. Yeah. Once we've gone to that point, we've developed our mana enough that we no longer need them. We can cash them into cards, which I think is really important.
Yeah.
And then we also have our mana base. This deck is playing Expedition Map and Sylvan Scrying and Primeval Titan to help us find our utility lands.
This is a different breed of utility lands, right? This is like Eye of Ugin.
Eye of Ugin, Eldrazi Temple, Gaia's Cradle, and Ancient Tomb. To propel us into casting these really powerful threats ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Which is really what you're trying to do in this deck. It's playing a minimal number of counter spells. It's playing Negate, Stubborn Denial, Mana Drain. Just to have some interaction when you need it. We have Mystical Tutor to find cards like Bonfire the Damned, Sylvan Scrying to find a land, or just a counterspell to keep us safe.
Are we playing Channel?
No Channel. It's not able to be utilized enough and quick enough.
This is where the degeneracy between us, where I passed it to you.
I think it's too hard in a three-color deck. The land base is also interesting to look at because it plays more colorless sources than normal. So we have like Shivan Reef, Yavimaya Coast, Flooded Grove, Cascade Bluffs, along with some other utility lands. I threw Myriad Landscape in here because I love that card. But you need a certain number of colorless sources in order to support all the waste mana, sea mana, in the costs and abilities of our cards.
Are you on Grove of the Broom Willows?
No. Probably should have been, yeah.
Adds colorless, can add green and red.
Yeah, Punishing Fire is also super reasonable in this deck.
And you just, like, don't... I mean, yes, you can have one or two life. I'm going to cast this 10-10.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine.
Yeah, but I goldfished this deck a bunch. I played it sort of against myself in some matches, and it certainly fares reasonably. It's a really solid mid-range deck. It is really good in the mid-range mirrors because it goes really, really high.
It goes over the top.
And cards like Eye of Ugin give you so much inevitability that it's impossible for the other decks to beat you.
Yeah, you're just... being like, if you top, there are so many different things that you can top deck that just end up winning you the game, right?
Yeah.
That are, and not just the lands, the creatures too.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and yeah, this deck is so threat dense, and you have both the ability to have nut draws with like Eye of Ugin, Eldrazi Temple, Ancient Tomb, just letting you cast four drops on turn two or even turn three, often good enough. But it also has draws where you play a normal game, and then on turn seven, you play Eye of Ugin, and then just start activating Eye of Ugin every other turn.
They have to deal with your stuff, too, right?
Your guys are big. Worldbreaker, big a boy.
He's a big dum-dum.
Yeah. He's got his dunce cap.
Oh, I hate that this guy has reach. I mean, it makes sense, but...
Look at him. His arms are just going off the card.
Yeah, I know. Is that that's an expedition?
Hit me, I'm open.
Yeah, this guy would just slay at volleyball.
Yeah. You're not spiking on this guy.
No. It's not happening.
You don't want to see him on the other side of the net.
No. What's the red for?
So the red's for some removal. We're playing Dak Faden. We're playing some early removal like Arc Trail, Flame Slash. We have Bonfire the Damned.
Oh, yeah, Bonfire.
And we have some creatures as well. We have Vile Aggregate, which is, if we're on the beatdown draw, there's not many, many better cards.
That guy's even just good against aggro. He has 5 toughness.
Yeah. He also has Ingest, which isn't irrelevant. Turns off all top of the deck tutors. Can mess with their top.
I forget this guy has Ingest, even though
everybody does. It looks like flavor text.
Yeah. I mean, it takes up most of the card, but man.
And also, we have Awakening Zone and From Beyond in this deck, so this guy can get real big, real fast.
Real big. Trample. This guy does everything.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I would hate, hate to be playing a blade deck against this kind of thing.
Colorless. Every creature is colorless.
Everything is colorless.
You destroy equipment.
Nice four swords, idiot.
Block with Ulamog.
Oh my god. Yeah, no, this deck seems sweet.
Yeah, and it's got really good answers to everything. Has game against everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important. So this is what I hope some people will be playing in the next couple of weeks. But what have you been playing, Jer, and what will you be playing if you can let us, let us know?
So last week I was sleeving up or laying out white-black aggro, and my roommate Chris Ireland, longtime Highlander player, has a sweet collection, known for brewing really sweet decks, was a half-landing budget lander reanimator against my other roommate. And I saw him putting Stormtide Leviathan in play and Jyngataxxus.
That's the biggest fish.
Oh, yeah.
That fish is so big.
Yeah. And so I was, like, most of the way done building black-white. It's 11:30 at night. I'm like, all right. Throw the black-white cards off the table. Get my blue box. Get my black box back out. Build Esper Reanimator. And I 3-1'd with that deck on Monday. I was pretty happy.
That was this Monday or the Monday before
this,
that?
This Monday.
I thought you drew a round.
No. Nick Picard conceded.
Oh, okay. Okay, gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Spicy.
Yeah.
What did you... This was a bit... I mean, obviously, we've done this segment before.
Yeah.
We will do this segment again. But this was a bit of a loaded question, because I wanted, if you're willing, to talk about what you played on Thursday. Last Thursday.
Oh, yeah. I played a Lurin last Thursday.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. I've sort of been the Highlander champion of that deck. I've 3-1'd every time I've played with it. It's the hardest deck I think I've played in the format. And I've played most of them.
Pretty much everything.
You just have so many lines, and you never know if you're supposed to combo or just keep playing the value game.
What are some spicy bullets you were running?
Peacekeeper. Many decks can't beat that card. And you can win through it with the combo.
Yeah.
Orzhov Pontiff. Stone Cloaker. Oh, I had such a sick line. Sorry, Cam. I got this... He was playing... Cam Lauder was playing Reanimator, and I had a Lurin in play and a Stonecloaker in my hand, and he goes to reanimate a spell, and I cast Stonecloaker off a Lurin for free, removed the target of his spell, returned Stonecloaker back to my hand, and then just dare him to cast another reanimation spell, and then on his end step... I remove his entire graveyard.
I didn't want to mention it when we were talking about how Mutavault and Mishra's Factory were best friends. I also got Cam with that exact, with pumping my Mutavault.
Oh no.
It was either that or it was Mutavault had flying because of Gale Rider Sliver. It was one of those two. Oh, oh, and it boy. Felt great. That's sorry, Cam.
Shout out to Cam for coming out to Highlander.
Yeah, no, it's... We are seeing a lot of people that, like, played mostly just, you know, at home or the office kind of thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's something I wanted to bring up, is we're consistently getting 32 to 38 players, but we're probably varying by about 10 players each tournament, which is really impressive and also scary, because if everyone decides to come out on the same night, we're going to have 60 people.
Yeah, this past Monday, right, 36 people, there were at least, like, five regulars that weren't there. And then
more than that, I think.
Yeah, and then like still a handful of people that show up from here, like here and there, that didn't come by.
Yeah.
That had been coming by somewhat recently.
Exactly.
Too. So that's nuts.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna take this moment because you mentioned Peacekeeper and Orzhov Pontiff. Those are both very powerful cards. And you had one loss when you were playing Alurin?
Yeah, you're a scumbag.
What was that loss against?
You.
And I was on Flying Men. Now, folks, if
games
you're not...
one and three, couldn't draw fifth land to Illidamri's Call for either Peacekeeper or Orzhov Pontiff.
Which I cannot beat.
No.
But better lucky than good, as I always say.
Yep.
And for those of you not familiar with Flying Men, it is a 1/1 flyer for one. That's it.
Yep.
It's quite a powerful magic card. It has human synergies, great art.
Are you even playing favorable winds in this deck?
No, I'm not. And actually, on the day that I played this, I didn't play a flying man because I didn't have a copy of one. It was in the mail. Some golden cards from this list, though. Streamhopper was a good one. And are you familiar
Scribblers?
With Streamhopper? Scribblers.
Yeah, the Scrib.
Scrib, what's Scrib?
The Nibblers.
Oh, I wasn't playing Scrib Nibblers. That's a rat.
No, the other one.
Manta Riders?
No, there's one that sounds like Scrib Nibblers.
So I'm pretty sure I had a couple of Scribes, Sprites. That was mostly the deck. Actually, there was a lot of Infiltrators. I had one game where I only cast Infiltrator creatures.
Are you playing Infiltrator on Vec?
No. I had
Infiltrator Ilkor.
Infiltrator Ilkor, Ink Fathom Infiltrator, and Dimensional Infiltrator.
Are you playing the Suspend Infiltrator?
Yeah, that's the core guy. Suspend Shadow 3-1.
Yeah.
Goes like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that too.
Oh, man.
Look at him go.
One of the best games I've ever played, I won with this card. I was playing against Alistair Howie. I was playing on blue-red sort of tempo. I had a Jason play. He had enough creatures to get me down to one life or kill my Jace. He chose to get me down to one. I brainstorm with Jace, brainstorm into Infiltrator Ilkor and Time Walk with exactly seven lands. Hard cast Infiltrator Ilkor, cast Time Walk.
Oh my god, that guy has a mana cost.
Brainstorm again with Jace, find Rune Chanter's Pike, equip this with Rune Chanter's Pike and hit him for 22.
Is that good? Is that lethal?
He looked so dumbfounded as to how he lost that game.
Yeah. I don't think anybody else has said those words or those cards in that order and then finished that sentence with, oh, and I won. you play a gallery of great cards.
Yeah.
One's for one that fly. One's for one that don't fly, but you can pay an additional blue to give them flying.
Yeah.
Goblin Balloon Brigades in blue. I played Gust Skimmer, for those of you that drafted Mirrodin Besiege or Modern Masters 2. It's a 2-mana, 2-1 flyer artifact creature, and you can pay one blue to give it flying. Highlander playable.
Nope.
Arguable.
Nope.
I did have Sapphire Leech in my deck. That's a 2-mana, 2-2 flyer. It says, the leech cycle from Invasion is a forgotten cycle.
Because they suck.
They're not good. They all make your spells cost one more, but they're supposed to be, like, powerfully cost. Except by modern standards, they're really bad. Like, the white one's like a 1-mana 1/2.
That's Spire.
It. I think it might have first strike.
Cost one less.
But that would be really ambitious to say. Played this guy. He's getting the cut. He's awful. I should have listened to everybody.
What about the guy who makes your hand size reduced by two?
Oh, Thought Nibbler. I am playing Thought Nibbler.
Yeah.
But that guy's just gas. That's a 1-mana 1/1 flyer. There you go. And his older brother, Thought Eater, 2-mana 2/2 flyer, reduces your hand by three. The text on the card, other than flying and its power and toughness, isn't really relevant outside of Gush or the game where I went turn one Nibbler into turn two Eater and then realized my huge mistake and had to discard like a 3-drop because I was never casting it. That was an in tournament. And then I played Sandra Bullock and that, you know.
That's
a deck.
Yeah.
Is there anything spicy you've got?
I think I'm going to try and run back Reanimator for a little while. This deck was super fun to play. Beating Spencer with my German copy of Vorash Shapeshifter because I explained to him what the card did.
You told him.
Asked him if he wanted the Oracle text. He said no. And then beating him with it because he didn't know what it did.
Can confirm, I watched this all happen and you gave him the appropriate amount of information, more than enough.
Yeah.
And offered additional, like, we can get it in front of you in English, like, what works. And then just... he forgot how cards go to the graveyard. He forgot that the last thing a card or a spell does is go to the graveyard.
Although discarding Elesh Norn at instant speed against a mono green player is pretty sweet.
That hurts. That's physically painful. That is.
All of your creatures get -2/-2.
But I like my creatures.
No.
Leave green mages alone.
And the German shapeshifter has the best name in all of Magic. Volras Gestalt Wandlers. And his creature type is Gestalt Wandler.
The Gestalt Wandler? Oh, no.
Sorry to all our German listeners.
German cards have the best names.
I'm sick because I probably butchered that name.
No, I know. That's what I mean. Is
yeah,
that,
they do have the best names, which
Worm
is why...
Worm Spiral Machine.
Yeah.
Primeval Titan is like Ermschlicker Titan or something. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mentioned the Kiln Fiend deck before with the Rune Chain Spike. I'm gonna jam that out on Thursday and probably Monday.
Sweet.
I think I'm going to splash green for Berserk.
Seems legit.
Because that's something I really want to do. Or black for Tainted Strike.
And Hatred.
That's going a little too deep, but... Okay, if you supply the copy of Hatred,
deal.
I'll consider it. I'll consider it.
I have four.
I'm not hardlocked. Why do you have four Hatreds?
I might have been building a legacy deck.
Well, folks, it's been great having you here.
On that note...
Do you want to take us with the shout-outs?
Yeah. Thanks a lot to Loading Ready Run for letting us use their really awesome studio.
Oh, they're the greatest. They're just angels.
The best.
Love them.
Shout-out to MTGCast for hosting the audio version. And then our social media, you can find us at canadianhighlander.wordpress.com.
Yep.
You can email at us, canadianhighlandermtg@gmail.com.
Yep.
We're on Twitter at @CanHighlander. And we have a Facebook page.
Yep. MTG, it's just MTG Canadian Highlander.
It's a group. But it's searchable. Yeah. It's public.
There's always people there talking.
We're on it.
Like nonstop. It's getting to the point. I kind of miss the days of like being able to make a post and then later in the day I just scroll down one and it's there.
Now you gotta get carpal tunnel.
Yeah, you gotta control F and it's awful and no, it's not awful. It's actually just sick.
Yeah.
You get home and there's like four different decks. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
But other than that, thank you for watching and or listening.
This has been Necronomicon 1. Later. Bye.